Okay, we'll call to order the June 2nd, 2021 Town of Curie Beach Planning and Zoning Commission. First item is to excuse Mr. Dugan.
So moved.
Second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay. Next item is adoption of the agenda. Is there a motion to adopt the agenda?
Sure.
Okay. Second? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay. Adoption of the minutes. We'll look at this for a second and see if there's... I know, that's why it's flipping. Yeah.
Adopt and move the agenda as presented.
Okay. There's been a motion to adopt the...
The minutes.
Oh, the minutes.
Yeah, we're on the minutes. We're passage.
All right, I'm sorry.
Okay, so there hasn't been a motion.
No, sorry.
Okay.
I move to adopt the minutes from May 5th.
As presented?
As presented.
Okay, is there a second?
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Public comments. Is there anybody on the phone?
We have one on the phone. Let me see if they're still there. Yes, we have a guest on the phone. If you would like to make comments, you can hit *6 to unmute yourself to speak.
Okay. Hearing none, we will close public comments and move to old business. First item on the agenda, 5.1, is an update on underground utilities.
Well, we finally have a meeting set with Duke. Found out, we got a message today. Ms. Pollard is from Duke, and Joe, Tony, and myself are going to try it. We're going to meet with her on Monday the 7th at 1 o'clock, place to be decided. What I would ask Joe and Tony, as myself, is to some questions. I don't want to overburden her, but let's see if we can come up with some questions. And if we meet at 1, maybe we can all get together at 12 to kind of coordinate and go over. So we'll decide the location where we're meeting after talking to her. The other thing is that looking at the web, if going back over the last meeting, we talked about Ms. Pollard had told me it was about $56 a foot, and we just calculated that from Alabama Avenue to K Avenue on 421, it'd be about $2.3 million to go ahead and do that. And this, I continue to just go through and look at the grants that different towns and cities are getting. Leland has put in a grant for underground utilities. I think if I got all the figures right, about $5 million, and they were looking to get 80%. I've got the gentleman's name in the town of Leland who's for planning, Mr. Andrea, and I've got to call into him. I'm going to see if he can provide us some assistance on what they did for their grant and start us maybe even getting going on how to apply for grants and how many grants areas they looked at. It's moving slowly, but it is moving.
Right? I agree with what you said, but I think you just quoted 56 a foot.
Yeah.
I believe the number was 500 a linear foot. Because when you calculate...
Oh, that's right. Yeah, five. I'm sorry. Yeah, no, it was five. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, 50. We could wish it was only 56. Yeah, so it's... sorry, thank you for correcting. Yeah, so... I thought, I haven't talked to Tony or Joe about this or anybody in the commission, that we would, that's what we would target. We target 421 as the first project to see what they would cost in time frame and disruption and everything.
I think that part of that will, we can get some guidance from Duke on,
yeah.
For, you know, that'd be from sitting here, that might be logical for us, but for them, it might be a different layout. Their feeds might be coming in totally opposite. They might be coming down a different way. That would, and disruption is a key thing,
if,
too.
If my memory, which fails me all the time, she said the 560 number, but she said that's on the high side, because mm-hmm. I did talk to her about 421, and then she said, well, you can average on the high side 560, whatever it was, dollars a foot. But we'll, you know, she was just talking off the top of her head too, so we'll see what she says.
Yeah, I think that some of the discussion will, you know, once you go underground, will that interfere with any future projects and additional lighting, you know, in my experiences, and you know, I'm sure yours also, it generates other things that municipalities want to do. So I think those are considerations also.
All right.
Okay.
To be continued. We'll let you know what.
Well, it's good progress.
We'll come to that meeting next for next mm-hmm. Monday.
All right. Any further discussion on 5.1? 5.2 land use plan update says Galbraith, but I think Joseph could probably give us a better update on this.
I think we're over 700 surveys. We're expecting hopefully 500. We have our meeting Tuesday morning at 10 a.m. to start covering the surveys, and also we will begin a review of chapter 1 and 2 of the existing management plan.
Okay.
On the underground utilities, can you provide a list of the questions you asked after your meeting?
Yeah.
And then we'll get them to council and just kind of have to start the dialogue there also.
Okay. So we'll take all our questions, put them together, and then give them to you. Want to just email them to you, or
yeah, that's fine. I'll give them up.
Okay. But probably be like Wednesday or Thursday. Is that okay? Okay.
Okay. Any further discussion on 5.2?
Well,
sorry.
Let me go back to 5.1. I should say I'm. No, never mind. Yeah, 5.2. Let's go.
Okay. Anything else on land use plan right now? Land use plan, again, is a public hearing, right, on Tuesday morning?
It's a public meeting, yeah.
It's a public meeting. Yeah. Is that going to be here or?
It'll be here.
Okay. But it's also available via phone?
I don't know. Is it?
We can do it via Zoom.
Okay.
All right. 5.3, review and report on Chapter 160D, proposed text amendment to Chapter 15.
I'll take that, Chairman.
This 160 has changed.
The fact that they can go to court. A bunch of lobbyists.
It also changes this organization.
I want to revisit 15 in a little more detail. Again, we kind of looked at 15 when we talked about the 160D texting. Let me start over again. 160D required us conforming the town code to those legislative changes. And we've gone through all those changes superficially, more so on 15 than the other provisions. The 160D text amendments included changes to chapters 2, 11, a new chapter 12, 13, 14, and 15. And we've been through all that. Council will have a public hearing on those, all those text amendments on June 21st, and then on a special meeting on June 23rd, we'll act on those changes. Second point, 160D focuses a lot, not just on the subdivision regulations and zoning regulations, but what they call development regulations, and includes everything from historic district provisions to stormwater provisions to utility provisions. They put so much emphasis on that you would think that when it comes to consistency statements, that the changes would have included a consistency statement for any amended development regulation. But no, they left it as it currently is, which means that we need consistency statements from DZC and from council for amendments to Chapter 15 only. since we need to do that, I thought we would walk through the 160B text amendments, chapter 15, in a little more detail. It should also be informative as to what I call, what the text amendments call quasi-judicial zoning decisions. Also, too, most of it being stylistic, some of it being substantive, because of what goes in chapter 12 text amendments, I did some revision to the historic district regulation. So we'll go through all that. The 160D calls it zoning regulations, so you'll see that I've added regulations to the title. If you look at that first table of contents, you'll see that we struck out Board of Adjustment and reserved it, and we struck out amendments and reserved it. That's because Board of Adjustment, you might recall this when we discussed it, chapter 12, Board of Adjustment was moved from 15 into the new chapter 12. Planning and zoning was moved from the old chapter 2 into the new chapter 12, and HPC was inserted into chapter 12 as well. So that's why also chapter 12 deals with how to, the process required for amending development regulations, including zoning and subdivision. So since all that ended up in 12, we've taken them, those out of 15 and reserved those sections. You go to, we'll just go, we've got definitions, you'll see on page 2 that we've added the Board of Adjustment, which is covered in that section 10 to 12. You'll see on page, somewhere, I must have missed the division, but the Historic Preservation Commission has also been added. Be a reference very similar to the Board of Adjustment, just refers you to chapter 12 for the HPC. Planning and Zoning Commission on page 9, you can see again the reference to chapter 12. And you recall we discussed that last time and discovered anew the emphasis, all of the responsibilities that DCC has, including the review of subdivision plats, including the ability to handle minor modifications to special use permits. That one surprised me. And a lot of emphasis on DCC's role in developing a comprehensive plan. All that is now in 12, and you might recall we discussed that previously. The you'll see there are very few changes to, boy, this is interesting. This is an old, this is not the current chapter 15. Because I took out 1502 of 20. But that's a minor change. We'll just catch it on the final. That's probably the difference. The so if you go to page 14, you'll see that the Board of Adjustment is taken out because that goes into chapter 12. You can see on page 16, table of comments, we took out permit choice, rule, vested rights, and special use permits because those are all covered in chapter 12. But if you'll note 1508080, quasi-judicial zoning decisions, to me that's one of the best things that 160D did. It grouped into one place the zoning decisions that are quasi-judicial. Previously, they were in different parts of 168. I believe in one sense they weren't even covered at all. You have to look at the case laws. But now they're all in one place, and it's a very useful resource for, I think, the public as well as staff. The so you'll see on page 18 that where we took out the permit choice rule, we also took out vested rights. Again, all that went in chapter 12. We took out special use permits because that is one of the quasi-judicial zoning decisions, and we covered it in that section, which starts at the bottom of 22. So the first one are appeals. There are a couple, there's probably two or three exceptions, but the bottom line is administrative decisions made under the town's development regulations are now, all those are now appealable to the Board of Adjustment. And that's a very key difference in what we had before. Currently, decisions and interpretations of zoning regulations are appealable to the Board of Adjustment. This expands the Board of Adjustment's role to consider appeals from any decision or interpretation of any development regulation. And development regulations cover a whole gamut from stormwater to sedimentation and control to building permits to minimum housing code to Historic Preservation Commission, although that's one of the wrinkles for the appeals. The bottom line is the Board of Adjustment's scope of responsibility has increased substantially because they'll hear a lot more appeals, but they have the potential to hear a lot more appeals than they currently are authorized to hear. Special use permits is another quasi-judicial zoning decision that's done by town council with, you'll see under number four, procedures. PCC reviews and comments on those applications. You'll see C, the provisions of KBC 1206050 are applicable. Chairman, that's the reference to that section in chapter 12, which lays out everything you ever wanted to know about how to have a quasi-judicial hearing. The interesting thing about special use permits that I didn't remember until I saw it again, is on page 24F. Planning and Zoning Commission is authorized to approve minor modifications in the plans for improved special use, provided they comply with subsections 1-4 above. Again, that should be immediately above. There's a more final draft of chapter 15, but that final draft, it only has some tweaks. It doesn't change what we're doing tonight. You'll see another quasi-judicial decision shows up in subsection C, Certificates of Appropriateness. That's when HBC hears applications for COAs. Another quasi-judicial zoning decision is variance. Again, these were scattered throughout Chapter 168. Now they're all grouped in one place, which makes a lot more sense. But those are the elements 1-4 that you have to prove to get a variance. If you go, again, there's a reference on variances that carries you back to 1206050, quasi-judicial procedures. If you go there, there's a subsection for voting, and it will tell you that to grant a variance, the Board of Adjustment needs to approve that with a supermajority of 4/5 of the board. Everything else is majority vote.
Excuse me, I have a question, because I am confused. About with this special use permit, that it's quasi-judicial. So when that development went up down at the south end of Kerry Beach a few years ago, that development, it was a bunch of townhomes.
The Cove.
That process that they went through to get that development approved, would you consider, if you recall, because I think you were with PNZ at the time, would you consider that as having been quasi-judicial?
I don't recall the specifics of that particular development approval.
I just came in and showed us the plots.
Was that a subdivision? Because that was just applied and granted.
Subdivision is administrative approval.
Yeah.
That was your use permit.
The golf cart was the golf cart parking was a special use permit.
What about the golf cart issue?
Yeah, that was a special use permit.
And was that handled in a quasi-judicial manner?
They always are. Special use permits are always handled as positive judicial. Now, DC reviews and reports, much like you all do with text amendments, that's not qualified judicial. That's legislative. But when it gets to town council, that is quasi-judicial.
That seemed very different to me than somebody coming to the Board of Adjustment for a variance. That was a very different procedure, and that's where we had to have the court reporter and all. So I'm just confused about what constitutes quasi-judicial, that's all.
We're going to have training on that, aren't we, sometime in the future?
What constitutes quasi-judicial is laid out in this section that we're talking about. So let me say three things to your point. What constitutes a quasi-judicial zoning decision is laid out in this section, Chapter 15, that we've been reviewing. And they are special use permits, appeals under any development regulation, including stormwater, where currently it's just zoning. Certificates of appropriateness for HPC and variances. Now, VOA, the other thing I would say, I've been representing municipalities for over 25 years. And it's always been fascinating to me to see how a commission or a board comprised of lay people, not legal people, conduct and decide quasi-judicial hearings. And I'll give you a reverse example to kind of make my point without directly making. I've handled quasi-judicial decisions not only for municipalities but for developers, and I know quasi-judicial procedures inside out. And they're not public hearings, which are now called legislative hearings. They're evidentiary hearings. They're more like a trial than anything else. And Chairman's right. We'll have training on this as time goes by. But I had a hearing one time where the applicant wanted to do a daycare center, and that was my client, and there was a significant opposition by the surrounding homeowners association. And they came in and presented a lot of incompetent evidence. They talked about how their property values were diminished, but they didn't have an appraisal without an expert opinion. They complained about how the proposed use would impede traffic and raise safety concerns, but that was incompetent because they didn't have traffic impact analysis, which now the statutes require. Back then, case law required. That's another thing that 150B has done, is codified case law in some respects. So I got up there and I made all these objections, because that's what I was trying to do. I was trying to create a record to go to court on. Because it didn't look good for my client decision-wise, so I was building a record. So I got up there and I made all my evidentiary objections. And the spokesperson for the opponents got back up and said, we object to Mr. Eldridge's objections. He's making this more like a trial than a public hearing. And that's exactly the point. If you do it right, and you understand what you're doing, and you get into the technicalities, and you do it like it's supposed to be done, it is more like a trial than a public hearing, and that's why they call it quasi-judicial. But the bottom line is, most of the time, individuals in your position are not that experienced with those concepts, and therefore, streamline or do it more informally than somebody that has attention to detail, excessive I admit at times, that I would. So it may be that when we have training, perhaps town council would want some training as well. The Board of Adjustment does it regularly, town council doesn't do it that often. But at the end of the day, if the applicant has put forth competent evidence in any form, whether it's a site plan that everybody's happy with, or whether it's a red button issue and they bring in experts and testimony as well as exhibits. At the end of the day, if the applicant meets his burden, then the permit needs to be granted. And in the golf cart situation, while it may not have been as technical as it could have been, I think you could conclude, based on the council's decision and probably based on PZC's recommendation, which I'd have to go back and confirm, that the applicant met their burden.
So, to clarify for me then, quasi-judicial means evidence is provided. So that subdivision, the Cove, that was quasi-judicial because they had to come to planning and zoning and present their site plan and how they were going to comply with the stormwater.
I respectfully disagree, and I'll tell you why. Subdivision decisions can be one of two forms, administrative or quasi-judicial. You're right. Quasi-judicial is an evidentiary hearing, and that's, they're not even called quasi-judicial anymore under 160D, they're called evidentiary hearing. But what distinguishes, and I think I understand your point, that when the applicant for the subdivision came forward, they also put forth exhibits or evidence or record items to show that they complied with the subdivision regulations. The difference between the two is quasi-judicial decisions allow for the decision maker to exercise discretion. Administrative decisions, the decision maker simply and only determines whether or not all the requirements have been met. There's no discretion. Now, what do I mean by that? In variances, the Board of Adjustment can add conditions to special use permits, the town council can add conditions to the approval. So the applicant has to come in and prove 1, 2, 3, 4, and town council can say, yeah, we think you met 1, 2, 3, 4, but we're also concerned about this, so we want you to do this, and you're approved if you do this extra thing. That's the discretionary element, and that doesn't exist in this town's subdivision regulations. So in each case, somebody's coming in to prove something, but all they're doing administratively is proving that they meet the checklist in 1408.010, I believe. whereas in quasi-judicial, they're also subject to the decision maker's discretionary ability to add conditions.
And not to be difficult, but you just said 160D now calls it evidentiary decisions.
Yeah, instead of public hearings, we now have legislative hearings. Instead of quasi-judicial decisions, we have evidentiary hearings. But 160D goes on to say that an evidentiary hearing shall be conducted in accordance with these quasi-judicial procedures. In chapter 12, that's 1206050, which comes from 160D-405. So they still use quasi-judicial, but they call the hearings themselves evidentiary. Text amendment decisions, those are legislative decisions. Instead of corporate and extraterritorial jurisdiction, it's now planning and development regulation jurisdiction. So there is some terminology.
So it wouldn't behoove us to
read chapter 12
to title 1508080 evidentiary decisions.
No.
So that we're in line with 160D, and that's going to be my final question.
No, 160D uses that same language. And again, the final. It should be 1508080, which comes from, I believe, 160D-803. They use, that's their title, quasi-judicial zoning decision, 160D's title. Again, going through to the end of those quasi-judicial zoning decisions, we go, most of 15 did not have to be revised because after these sections, you get into the actual zoning regulations and the district regulations and the sign regulations and so forth and so on. 160D doesn't impact it. 160D deals with everything that has to be done to get to that point. But the last set of changes would be in Article 8 of Chapter 15, where we pick up the historic district. That starts on page 30. It should be up on the screen. Most of this is verbatim what you all recommended, which council approved 1 or 2 months ago, I forget. But you'll see the strikeouts. The strikeouts show up on bottom 31, where we took out hearings and notice and set forth procedure. So if you go to the top of the next page, subsection 1, procedure, the provisions of KBC 1206-050 are applicable to the HBC deciding applications for certificate of appropriateness. 1206-050 is entitled quasi-judicial procedures, and that's that recipe I keep referring to about everything you want to know about quasi-judicial procedures, because that provision in Chapter 12 lays out all the procedures that need to be followed. It would be redundant to not strike out subsections 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, K as well. And again, the numbering's not right. I think that was fixed on the final. Because all that's covered in 1206-050. Then you get to the review criteria, and now we're back into what you all looked at before. So the only difference, the only rewrite of the historic district or the preservation district regulation was to eliminate the redundancy of the quasi-judicial procedures and simply shorthand that, eliminate that redundancy by referring to that section of 12 of Chapter 12 that lays out quasi-judicial procedures, which cover, as you saw in the quasi-judicial zoning decisions, appeals, variances, special use, and certificates of appropriateness. So those are the only changes. These are the Chapter 15 text amendments engendered by 160D. And if you all would like to enter, there's no wiggle room. If you'd like to entertain a recommendation to a motion recommending council approve these things, then that would be the next step. And then after that, we'll adopt a consistency statement. The consistency statement is pretty simple in this case. The proposed amendments conform these articles to the provision of the recently enacted Chapter 160D, which consolidated, reorganized, and codified local government planning and development regulatory authority. And that's consistent with the community goals of the land use plan in Part 2, Section 1A. So, if you want to entertain a motion to approve, to recommend approval of adoption of those text amendments, and a second motion adopting the consistency statement, that will complete this agenda, unless there's any questions.
Okay, before we entertain a motion, are there any additional questions? No. Somebody want to make a motion to recommend approval to the revisions for Chapter 15 zoning articles 2, 4, 6, and 8?
That's correct. So moved.
Second.
Second. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay. Second, is somebody want to make a motion to approve, I guess approve, the zoning consistency statement?
I make a motion.
Okay.
Consistency statement.
Second? Oh, I'll second one. Okay. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay, excellent. Okay, discussion of Robert's rules. Again, it's the same thing we talked about.
Yeah.
What's that?
I know you're sorry to leave that exciting topic.
I dream of 160D.
I dream of one.
That could be a song.
Yes.
Again, the same issue for discussion of Robert's rules that we have for historic preservation, if it's okay. To have Mr. Eldridge make the appropriate text motion. Is there a motion for that for P&Z? Oh, we did it for HPC, but we need probably have a motion for P&Z. Okay, I'll go ahead and make that motion.
I second.
Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay. Last item is the electric vehicle charger. Yeah, this is something now dear to my heart, to say the least. And I have to admit, like 4 weeks ago, I didn't know anything about electric vehicles, to be honest. And we bought our electric vehicle in Columbus 3 weeks ago and drove it back here. That was during the gas crisis, actually. And it struck me the very, very first night, because we spent a night, is that I searched the map. There are maps out there showing where chargers are and everything like that. Is that we picked a hotel based because they had a charger there. And as I pulled up, they had a bank of about six or seven chargers. And five of them were taken by electric vehicles. I thought, well, this is, you know, really good for attracting people into the area. So once I got back here to Kiri Beach, I started to look and see what was available here in Kiri Beach. Nothing. Nothing available on Pleasure Island. But Wilmington does have a lot of places with chargers, including Chick-fil-A. Chick-fil-A has free chargers there. When you go over there, there's always, in fact, this is Chick-fil-A right there. Yeah, Whole Foods has one, and they're always used. And so obviously here's two Teslas here who are using the Chick-fil-A charger, and I'm sure they're eating a Chick-fil-A. And I did the same thing, used it myself. So I did some investigation into chargers with the idea of what type of chargers are out there and whether it kind of makes sense for Kiri Beach to maybe think about chargers. And there are three levels of chargers. One is what's called a level one. That's where you just plug it into your wall sockets, 110 volt. Level two are 240 volt chargers. These are called destination chargers because it takes about 4 to 5 hours to be able to get a full charge right there. Chick-fil-A, what you saw right there in the picture.
You know what, the first one?
Yeah, yeah. These are level two. Let's see, do you have another one that actually shows the chargers? Yeah. That's a level two charger right there. And so that would become what's called a destination charger. A level three is what are called superchargers. Tesla has developed that network. They basically put them on freeways, you know, where people are doing that. Charges an electric vehicle in 30 minutes to 45 minutes. So what certainly makes sense for Kiri Beach, if we wanted to consider it, is maybe a bank of level two chargers. So, but I didn't want to, you know, I started doing some checking as to what the cost would be and stuff like that. And several, you know, there's several ways of doing it. There are for-profit companies that put these things in, and then they charge and make money on it. They can share some of the revenues with the town. A town can go out and actually buy the charger, which is probably what Chick-fil-A did here, and just go ahead and install it. They're free. They're not charging for this at all. There are networks out there, so this could actually be linked to a network where Kiri Beach could charge for this just like they do on parking and make money on this. So, but before I went any further, I wanted to kind of get permission to maybe do additional investigation about what the cost would be and the different options related to this. And several of the for-profit networks will actually do a site analysis for free. There's no obligation. So after kind of recommending this, Mandy kind of jumped on this and set out on the listserv, I guess, the requests, because I know everybody's interested in municipalities doing this now. They're really pushing this in municipality. And Mandy, do you want to talk about what you got with your kind of requests?
Yeah, so basically I just went out on our listserv, which is like a question answer for all of North Carolina, and it's through the school government. And I just asked, who's doing it? Who has it? Share your information with me. Unfortunately, we missed the Duke Progress Energy grant
application.
They would have done it for free.
At the end of March, yeah. And they were doing it. They had several steps to their program. That's not to say it won't come back around. I don't know how often they do it. We could probably reach out.
I've already reached out, by the way, to Duke.
Did you?
Yeah, I did. On the web page, it says that it's likely that they'll continue to do it, and they just ask for somebody's name if they do it. So I put my name in, so they'll contact me. Yeah.
Good. And then, but what I found, what I thought was interesting, was that it was kind of smaller feeling towns that had it. Newport, Swansboro.
There's one other one.
There was one other one.
Yadkinville.
Yeah.
And
I know Wilmington.
Town of Hope Mills. And of course Wilmington, but they're so large. I mean, and then most of the ones in Wilmington, I don't know if any are actually hosted by the city of Wilmington. They may just be at individual businesses.
They're in the parking structure. Whoever owns.
Are they in the parking structure?
Yeah, they're in the parking structure.
Didn't Jim Moldenquist speak about charging station down at Joey's Park?
It was a bike repair station.
Bike repair.
Which was approved to install it.
Yeah. I don't think the installation's done, but it is here. The equipment's here for that.
So I was doing some searching about beach towns, and I got into the Laguna Beach, California webpage, and right there, they have ChargePoint, which is one of the for-profit. Here's from the mayor of Laguna Beach, and it's right on their webpage right here. And I thought this was interesting. All the electric vehicles in Orange County, California will now be able to drive here and enjoy the city of Laguna Beach and visit the best beaches around, the best restaurants around, and the best shopping around. So, you know, it really is a destination. It really is an attraction. So anyway, I just wanted to see if it was okay, because it really is, I feel, under the purview of P&Z, given what we talked about last time and the relatively broad. If it's okay that I continue looking at the options and maybe come in with some more data for our next meeting.
Yeah.
Sure.
Okay. Now, do the, when you said there are four, did you find out, are there 1, 10, 50, or don't know?
I honestly don't know what the cost is.
Number of companies.
Oh, I would say there's probably about 4 to 5 companies that are setting up networks.
Because we could do it like we did parking, have them come in and
survey. And what I could tell is that they are willing to do, I don't think they come on site, I actually think they do it all online.
Google Earth, yeah.
But they will do a site analysis and come up with a proposal, and doing that site analysis is free.
Then
you can also simply purchase, which I imagine Chick-fil-A did. Chick-fil-A probably went out and bought that and installed it on the 240, had hired an electrician to come in and do it.
Yeah, they're not charging.
Yeah, so they're doing that, but there are then separate networks that will link to this, and you can have
right.
a credit card or do whatever. I mean, it's a developing.
Well, and some of these, well, you don't. Well, they are they end up charging you somehow.
Yeah.
I know in New York they do.
Yeah.
You think it's free, and all of a sudden it's not. But
no,
yeah,
I mean,
it was at Chick-fil-A, right?
Chick-fil-A is free. You could drive up there and you can plug it in and.
No, I think. Now, where would you think the town would be susceptible to putting one on town property? Because that would be the easiest way to get it going.
Yeah. Probably the only place, but it would be the ballpark. 2 spaces in the ballpark.
Yeah.
You don't think on this property or the community center?
Ballpark.
You know, and
but that'd still be good. I mean, it.
And it's, you know, it will expand. You know, I found some data because we were talking. I'm sure. I think I copied everybody on this and. The data is showing that, you know, I think about only 2 to 3%. I think there's only, I've been keeping track, and I think there's one other Tesla on Pleasure Island right now. But you start to see more and more. I saw 3 parked out here.
There's a bunch in Wilmington.
Yeah, there's a bunch in Wilmington. But the prediction is by 2 years, it's going to be up to 5% of all new cars sold. And some companies like Volvo and places like that said by 2030 they're not going to sell any more internal combustion cars. It's done.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it clearly is the future. And if anybody wants to go for a ride afterwards, I'll show you what the future looks like because it's a fun, fast future.
Just don't get upset when he doesn't put the brakes on.
So. It hold on when he does.
Anyway, so if it's okay, I'll continue to look and come in with some recommendations. And because it's, I mean, literally, it's something I knew nothing about, didn't even care about.
Now, do you want to reach out to, as part of this, would you reach out to the business community, see if any of the businesses are interested?
Well, I looked at one map, because another thing, too, is that once you do this, you're on maps, and people look at the maps and will drive to these places. The veterinarian down by the post office is on a map for having one put in the future. So, I think we're going to start seeing businesses put these things in,
but
too.
Downtown, there's really no parking for them. I mean,
no, I mean, it's all public parking anyway.
Public
so.
Parking.
Okay.
So I don't get to do lots of good work.
All right, great. All right. Any other discussions on EVs? Next one. Is there a motion to adjourn?
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Excellent.
So I can start charging my golf cart there free.
No. And